This is the ad that was promised. You've been waiting to find out how you could win a pair of amazing Targaryen cufflinks? Well, here it is. It's an easy one. Just email us with your favorite moment from the entire series of Game of Thrones. Email us with your favorite moment from the entire series of Game of Thrones for our series Look Back, and you'll be entered to win a pair of awesome Targaryen cufflinks from cufflinks.com. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR. Use code GOT20 today to get 20% off your order of amazing Game of Thrones fully authorized and amazing products. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR today and email us your favorite moment of this series to podcastwinterfell@gmail.com. Now on to the show. Welcome back to Podcast Winterfell. I have a really special pod for you today. I had the awesome opportunity and a tremendous experience of being on Robert's live stream. Robert In Deep Geek is his channel on YouTube. Man, there were like 4,000 people up in the chat. Now, I know we have a lot of listeners, but it's not live, you know? So it's a little bit different when you're live and people are looking at you. It was a lot of people, but the adrenaline was pumping, and Robert is such an amazing host. He was able to listen to me and look at the chat and the moderators, and it just went so smoothly. He is amazing. He's just someone to learn from as far as hosting goes. Just a fantastic show. And if you like this, then please subscribe to Robert at In Deep Geek on YouTube. He also has something called The Well-Told Tale, which is fantastic. He has such a beautiful, soothing voice, such beautiful pronunciation. I loved being on the show with him. So subscribe to The Well-Told Tale. Subscribe to In Deep Geek. He also covers Westworld. He has awesome videos, tours of Westeros, and he's going to do Essos. This guy is just doing it. He's amazing. And I want to give a special shout out to Justin Thomas of Top Shelf Fandom, who's the one who originally introduced me to Robert. It's been really wonderful jumping on YouTube this week. I had the opportunity to be on with Robert. I had the opportunity to be on with Jack from Jay and Jack. Johnny B. Crazy came on with Tim. I mean, this is a wonderful community, and whether or not you're enjoying the show, which I hope you are because we are, it's just wonderful that this community is here. We made this together, people. This is our special place. This is our sideways. We only got a week left until we take a little time off and then the prequels come, and then we're going to be podcasting the prequels and doing all this again. But let's celebrate, let's have fun, and I hope you enjoy listening to Robert and I. And thank you, Robert, once again for being a fantastic and welcoming host. Go out and subscribe. In Deep Geek, here's Robert and I live on YouTube.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to In Deep Geek Live. Welcome to episode 5 pre-show live stream. Very excited today. Not only have we got what's probably going to be quite a big episode coming up, I've also got a very special guest today. I worked with him all the way through Westworld season 2, and he's a fantastic presence here talking about all sorts of elements of the fandom. Probably the best voice in podcasting, I would say. Axel, do you want to say hi?
Robert, thank you so much for having me on, brother. I am just so happy for your success here. I'm glad to be here today. Everyone can check me out at podcastwinterfell.com. We put out a bunch of great podcasts, and like Robert said, we cover other things like Westworld. I'm going to be covering Big Little Lies. We love TV. But today it's Game of Thrones, baby. The penultimate episode of the entire series. I got excited there, and I will get more excited as we continue. Thank you for having me, and thanks to everyone in the chat.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure, as always. Okay, so as usual, guys, the way that we're going to run this is I'm going to aim for 2 hours. We're taking questions from anywhere. We're going to be talking, looking back at episode 4, as well as looking forward to episode 5. So drop any questions you've got in the chat. We had a couple of super chats before we went live that I'll pick up on in just one moment. Thank you so much for that. And obviously, we'll get to Super Chats as soon as we can. But Axel, why don't we just start kind of high level? What have you made? This has been within the Game of Thrones fandom. It's been quite a controversial season. Yeah. Where do you stand on it? Have you enjoyed it? What have been your big standout moments so far?
Well, you know what, Robert? I fully respect when other people are having an issue with this season, or that the last couple seasons, maybe post-book, the show has sped up and it's become more like a traditional television show. And I accept that. You know, we all could wish that something is absolutely super perfect, but I think that they've done a fantastic job of translating thick, deep, mythological, characterized books into a fun adventure action drama television show that I've really loved. And yeah, this season, I could see when I look into specific episodes, even the last episode, I say to myself, wow, I kind of felt like it was like four episodes in one. So much went on that you could see if you were in a writer's room fleshing out different parts of it and elongating it. But there's reasons, whether it's people wanting to move on, contracts, people have put 15 years of this of their lives into this show. I'm still enjoying every week. I'm having a lot of fun. I'm at the edge of my seat. I have no idea what's going to happen, though I have a lot of theories as always. But I'm having fun. And you know what, Robert? I'm having fun with the community. I know a lot of people are down, but it's kind of like if you were like graduating high school, but like the high school burned down like a week before and you really wanted to celebrate. like it didn't burn down. We're still here. We're having fun.
Absolutely. And there's two episodes to go. And I think that they are clearly going to have a huge amount. The one thing we can say for certain, there's going to be a huge amount of plot going on in these episodes. Yes. There's a lot of things that they still need to work through. If you're watching this live, incidentally, I had to say this a few times last week. No spoilers in the chat, please. I've told the moderators that they've got full power to not just delete any spoilerish comments, but also to hide whoever does it, so people won't see your comments at all from that point onwards. So moderators, thank you so much. You are the unsung heroes of this community. But I said we did get a couple of super chats before we started, so let's just quickly pick up on them. Eddie Brock, 147, thank you so much. Didn't see a question with that one, but thank you. A God of Bricks says, thanks for everything you do. Truly a wonderful watch every single time. Thank you. I really appreciate that. And Maura Lee with a very generous super chat beforehand. Thank you, Maura. I know you're not watching this one live, but thank you for when you are watching back later. Saying, here's wishing everyone who is celebrating a very happy Mother's Day. This is in honor of all the mothers in both A Song of Ice and Fire and Fire and Blood. Looking forward to episode 5, the live stream, and the episode breakdown afterwards. Well, let's pick up on this idea about this being Mother's Day. So this is Mother's Day in America, and the timing here is probably not coincidental. They've built up this idea about Cersei and potential motherhood that was brought up last time. Dany keeps on saying about the dragons are her children. Do you think we're going to see something big connected to the idea of motherhood in this episode?
Well, what was it? 4 years ago, Tywin died on Father's Day and took a bow, and it was Father's Day here in the U.S., and today is Mother's Day, and I mean, I definitely think so. You have two mothers going at it, and I don't see them both getting out of this alive. Whether or not it's from their own doing, which I'm kind of a fan of, or each other, we have reached the point where not only is obviously the series is coming to a close, so you can guess that people are going to perish in a meta way, but also in our story, Dany is alone. She's isolated. She's lost her last real advisor, and looks to me like she was heading right back to that dragon. So I think, Robert, that we are going to see a big boom that probably starts with yellow and red, but ends in green, because Cersei loves that wildfire. And this show loves to do things in threes and repeat those themes. And as they always say, we had this in our toolbox. We had this peg that we could go to. And there's been some pictures floating around of, you know, from the trailer of, you can see a little bit of barrels, you know, on here and there. So I think we're going to get not only the fight of the mothers, but the theme too. I think that's going to be an important theme through this episode.
Yeah, I think you're right. And just incidentally, for those in the chat who are asking, yes, there is a different Mother's Day in the UK. It was back in March. I think you're right. What they clearly played up is this symmetry between Cersei and Daenerys, with Cersei with her three children that she lost, and the loss of those three children, they've been very much presenting as being that was the moment that she kind of flipped from being somebody who's cruel and self-centered, but to be something worse than that. And with Dany, they've been clearly getting at this idea. She also has three children, the three dragons. She's lost two of them. What happens if she loses the third? Is it going to go the same way as it did with Cersei? So I think that's the symmetry that they're playing with. They're clearly building up to this idea that that Dany is going to go mad, as it were. Now, as it stands, I don't know what's going to happen in this next episode. As it stands, I think mad is the wrong word. I think that she clearly has had quite a rough time. She's lost two of her children. She's lost her best friend. Before that, she lost Ser Jorah. She's lost so much in this. And she's also probably stressing about her relationship with Jon quite a lot at the moment as well. She's in a bad place, and that's not madness. That's her being in a really bad, dark place, and that is very human and very understandable. What the interesting thing will be in terms of the plot going forward is what this means for them when they're playing with this idea about if another dragon dies. And I think another dragon will die. I think that's the way it's going to be going. Jack Hurst, thank you so much for the super chat, saying, UK-based with a 9 a.m. start. Considering staying up to watch the episode, it'll only be worth it, though, if it's amazing. So, Robert, will it be amazing? I don't know. I think, though, that what this will be is going to have lots of things happening, and I think that you will not want to miss it, because whether you enjoy it and think it's amazing or you don't enjoy it and don't think it's amazing, the way that they structure the seasons of Game of Thrones has always been the penultimate episode, the one before the last one, that is the one with the huge things happening. And then the final episode of each season is kind of more of a wrapping things up and just sort of tying off the bits of plot. So I think this is where the big bits of the King's Landing plot line will all come to a head in this one. Lucas Giorgio says, Dany once said, I'm not a politician, I'm a queen. Do you think she still follows this narrative? Also, thank you for your optimistic outlook on the show. Thank you. What do you make of this one then, Axel? A politician, not a politician, a queen. What do you think the difference is between the two in her mind, at least?
Well, I think that there's a difference between being a coalition builder and being a ruler. And I think that this has been Dany's struggle throughout this series, right? What does it mean that she was born to be the queen? What does it mean that she can walk through fire and come out on the other end? No one was there to tell her, right? There's an important line, a Targaryen alone in the world, there isn't, right, a more sad thing. Mm. And really, Dany has been alone. She's had these advisors come to her, but she hasn't had another person like her, another Targaryen, her father, her parents, her group, her family, to kind of guide her. So she's been on this sole mission to rule. And I think in her own mind, by bifurcating the ruling and the politician, she has, in a sense, done away with the idea that she is a person that can compromise and find a middle way. And I think that's where the problem lies. And I think they've done a pretty good job of laying that down. And this will be the final determination of that. Will she think that only power can succeed? Or will she realize she should have listened? They should have never went there. The reason that Rhaegal got knocked down out of the sky is the same reason that Jon said he didn't ride the dragon, because it was tired and needed to rest. And she's pushing. And unfortunately, I think we're headed towards a bad end for Dany. And I would agree with you. When that dragon goes down, Robert, she might be on top of it. And she could maybe survive a fire, but I don't know if she can survive a fall.
Well, I think, I think Drogon is not long for this world. So he certainly won't be in Westeros at the end of the season. That bit I'm absolutely convinced of. I think it's very likely that he will die in this episode. I think Dany will survive that. That's just a gut instinct, but I think Dany will survive that, and that will be what gives her that decision point about where she goes with this, because then she will have lost all of her children. So I think they won't want to miss that decision point. For me, though, I think one of the things which is fascinating, and the books make quite a big play of the difference between being a conqueror, they mention it on the show as well, being a conqueror and being a ruler. And when she was in Meereen, in the book, she's there for a long time and she clearly is struggling at it. And that's, it's a hard task. Culture she didn't understand at all. But she found that quite hard. And the pressure on her from people like Quaithe in the books is to remember who she is. She's a Targaryen. She's a conqueror. And in this last season and season before, season seven, we've seen continually that her instinct has been to attack, to conquer, and her advisors have been trying to rein her in. I think that's going to change this episode. I think that she's going to start ignoring what her advisors are saying and actually just go on the attack. Jack Hurst, thank you so much, says, wow, Axel, I was really worried about something to do with work. Then I heard you speak, and now I've forgotten what it was. As I told you guys, the finest voice in podcasting. David Plaster, thank you so much, saying, thanks, Deep Geek, watched a lot, donated never. Sorry, you don't need to say sorry. Thank you so much for the donation. I really appreciate it. This is a question that I've tweeted about, so I've got some views on this. I'd really be interested in your thoughts on this, actually, Axel. Brett Castle says, John going north of the wall, likely or not, for the end. So after everything's happened and whatever happens in King's Landing happens, what's the chances, do you think, that John is going to just go north?
I love this idea. I think it's fantastic. I was actually just on the phone with a good friend of mine, Arif, and he said to me, I see Jon Snow doing the same thing he did when he left the Night's Watch. He doesn't want anything to do with when things get too messy and confused and he feels that people are not following the best interest of really themselves or the people. He kind of has to go and do his own thing and step out. And I could see that happening, Jon going north of the wall, whether that's to join Tormund, because that's another interesting line that Tormund had last episode is when he said goodbye to Jon, he said something like, you've got true northern blood in you, Snow. And what he meant when Tormund says that, that doesn't mean northern, that means north of the wall, you know, wildling. And that's a theme that's played throughout this whole series and in the books as well, right? The kind of way that the northerners are mixed with that magic north of the wall. It makes sense. Now, I do want to posit a secondary kind of maybe tinfoil theory, which is that if Jon somehow has to bring, you know, balance to the force by becoming the new Night King or becoming the new kind of power north of the wall, and maybe this time it'll be a positive power, or one that's at peace with the magic that exists in Westeros. But I have seen that out there as well. But I do love that idea of Jon kind of going back north of the wall and maybe even forming a new society there. Something like that.
I mean, I quite like the idea of him roaming solo.
I have to say, I like that. That's cool.
That kind of work. When I tweeted about this, what I was picking up on there was something that has been a running thread throughout this relationship between John and Sam, which is an echo of the relationship between Frodo and Sam in The Lord of the Rings. That there's lots of beats to this. They've done it all the way through. And this last bit that we saw this last episode was Sam basically says, I'm going to name my firstborn son after you. And that's exactly what Sam Gamgee also did. He named his firstborn son after Frodo. And as we know, at the end of it all, Frodo, world-weary, heads off into the West. This world, he did his duty. He's not enjoying the world afterwards. He just heads off into the West because this world is not for him anymore. And that feel is very much where, if John survives, if Danny's dead, I think that's very likely to be where we might end up. If he feels betrayed by Sansa and by his family, that makes complete sense that he will not want to be king. He's never wanted to be king. He might just go off into the North. And wow, this world weary, this world is not for him anymore. That really works for me as a kind of a poetic ending for him that mirrors Lord of the Rings. But also, they obviously, as we've been talking about with Tormund, they kind of set it up as a possibility. He's got the invite now to go north. It's just a matter of whether he does it.
And Ghost is there.
And Ghost is there as well. But I think everyone wants a happy ending for Ghost because... Yeah.
Oh, no.
let's not go there. But as we're talking about direwolves, Gies Mulders, thank you so much, says, "The lone wolf dies, but the pack survives." Yeah. Is Danny the lone wolf while the Starks are the surviving pack? I'll just kick off on this one and then throw it to you, Axel. So my take, this is a saying that Ned Stark comes out with back in season one, book one. He is clearly trying to teach the Starks that they have to stick together. And that is the point that he's trying to make. And I think that there's a danger in trying to treat this as some kind of prophecy and trying to say, well, okay, who's the lone wolf? They used it last season and it was like Littlefinger was sort of working on his own. The Starks were working as a team. So you could sort of do that, but I think that it's at its core, this is just showing that the team works best, not just individuals doing things. Whether that principle applies here with Dany, I think, is perhaps quite an interesting one, whether or not she is therefore going to have a bad end like Littlefinger did because she's going to act on her own. What do you think on that?
I mean, I'm in love with this saying. I think that it not only speaks to what this entire show is about, but the fandom as well. I started podcasting 11 years ago talking about Lost, which had the greatest finale of any television show. And no one disputes that, Robert. Everyone loves the Lost finale. So I feel very confident in saying that. But as far as Danny, that's a very perceptive notion there that now it has reversed, right? And she is, like I was saying before, a Targaryen alone in the world. The theme of this show is people have to work together. And unfortunately, I think a big theme of this show is how people deal with trauma, how people deal with loss, and whether, like the Night King, they are transformed and hurt and turned into something against their will, and then they take that anger and they lash out at everyone, or whether, like some of the other great characters we've seen, they take that and they use it as an opportunity to learn about themselves and grow and become closer to other people and find love. And Danny is at that point right now, and unfortunately, it seems like she's not going to choose the love part. She's not going to choose to try to find a way to make this better. As we saw in Tyrion's Peter Dinklage, amazing acting there, begging Cersei, this doesn't have to happen. All these people don't have to die. Dany's not even considering that. She's just acting with rage. And unfortunately, all alone, there's maybe no one there to stop her or give her better advice.
Yeah, I should probably just say in the chat, your comment about the Lost ending is getting a lot of comments. we'll just leave it hanging in there.
I guess,
I think you can decide for yourself whether Axel was being sarcastic about his praise for the Lost ending.
No, I loved it.
We'll leave it. I have seen better endings to TV shows. Let's say that.
That's okay.
Stan Teehee says, do you think it's possible that Cersei marries Jon? The end of the War of the Roses was ended in marriage. Tyrion and Sansa seems a misdirect. Yeah, for those who haven't come across this, the War of the Roses analogy before, this is the original inspiration for Game of Thrones, which is why we keep on coming back to it. George R. R. Martin says that this is where he initially started getting his thoughts about how it might all work out, or for the setting, actually, really, rather than how it's all going to work out. And in that very long story short, but House or the Lancaster's house is obviously like Lannister, and the York house, obviously like Stark. They were fighting for a long time, and that ended with the two families being joined together in marriage. And so the thinking and the theory has been for a long time that if they go down that route, then who is it in House Stark who looks possibly up for marriage? Well, the only real candidate we might think is Sansa. How about Tyrion, who she was already married to, for House Lannister? So that's that theory, which I like. I don't think they're necessarily going to go there, but I do like it as an idea. But this idea of Jon marrying Cersei, well, I have some thoughts, but Axel, what do you reckon? Do you think Jon would want to marry Cersei? Do you think Cersei would want to marry Jon?
Well, I was trying to put on my writer-director hat and see how we could get there. And I don't know how we could get there, because, I mean, it could play into your idea of Jon kind of like turning away from everything. You know, that he's put in a position where even Sansa is like, this is what we must do to have peace in this land, you know? And that would also mean that Euron would have to be taken out, which means that there's no comic relief and Tormund's gone to the north, so that's sad. But, I don't really see that happening. I don't think that Cersei is one to negotiate, really, at this point. The negotiation with Missandei was a public execution. That's what it was planned from the beginning. She didn't plan on doing anything but that. So I think she was baiting Dany. I think she wants a battle. She wants a war. She's past any type of redemption. I would be utterly shocked if they could pull it off. I would say bravo. But as far as your notion of Sansa and Tyrion, I love this idea. I know some people in the fandom don't like it for various reasons, but I think the show could pull that off. And I'm a huge Sansa fan, so I think that she would be a wise choice to not be a queen, maybe a prime minister. I don't know if we need any kings and queens anymore. Maybe a prime minister, I don't know what other word they might use that George could come up with, or Dan and Dave, but I kind of like that idea, Robert.
Yeah, I mean, I've played around with it a few times in a few different videos as a potential ending, and I think that they're both characters who have got a good chance of getting to them. Sansa, a better chance than Tyrion, I would probably guess. But I think she will survive, and I think that she will be in power. It's just a matter of where that power extends. But I think I would agree that, no, I can't see how we would get to a point where Jon would ever want to marry Cersei. That's where I would go to. I don't think that he would ever think it would bring peace. I think he's just going to be in a world in this episode and the next of just having to do what he has to do in order to bring peace to the realm, to end the wars. I think he is now at a place of just having had enough of it all. He's just doing his grim duty in the way that Ned would have done. But anime lover Nicole, hi, says, who will be the first to die on Team Danny and John? What do you reckon? Just let's have a quick prediction time on this one. Who's going to die first? There will be characters dying. Who do you reckon?
Tonight, who's going to die first? Wow, that's a tough one. I'm going to have to go with Grey Worm.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good shout. I think possibly Drogon, the reasons I gave before. But I think there will be a lot of character deaths, not just... And I think that there seemed some criticism that I wasn't quite sure about episode 3, that no major characters died. I think we will get major characters dying this episode. I think that this is the one when we're going to see the end of some pretty significant storylines. Dracarys Noir, thank you so much, saying, love all your work and the community. What are your thoughts on the possibility of Jon riding Drogon, or Drogon going riderless into battle? I think, just to kick this one off, I think that Danny is going to be riding Drogon. I think that's where it's going to be at. The only way that John would be riding Drogon is for whatever reason, Danny gets injured or something like that, and then he takes over. But the question is, what would he do with it? If John is riding Drogon, is he really going to be the kind of person who's going to be like raining fire down from above? That doesn't seem his kind of character. So my guess is that this is going to be Danny riding Drogon, and then they land in some way, whether taken down or whatever. I don't think John is going to be climbing on board. But could you see a way that we could end up with John riding Drogon?
You know, I mean, there's a way. Get a couple people in a room and we can come up with something, Robert. You know, I think that it could get there if like I was taught, maybe we have some kind of battle where Danny falls off the dragon or she's killed in another way. You know, there's some theories out there that Cersei has maybe hired the Faceless Men to take out Danny in this episode, and we might get a kind of left field death in that way. I'll tell you what, though, I do really like this idea. And the reason why I like this idea is because it would be wonderful to see someone have a dragon, have this power, and choose not to use it. Because this is something that Danny has never even considered. I was talking with my friend the other day, and I said, I was thinking a little bit about The Stand, the Stephen King novel, where they have like a nuclear bomb, right? And it becomes the focus of what's going to happen. And in some stories where a big device like a nuclear bomb, a bomb becomes the focus, there is sometimes a character, excuse me, who decides no one should use this. This is too powerful for anyone. This is not going to solve problems. It's just going to cause death. And that's why I've always thought that Dany was going to go over the edge throughout this whole series, because she's never even considered that. She's never even considered using diplomacy, using other means than her dragons. So to have John have the opportunity to have a dragon and someone say, go get him, John, and he goes, no, I won't do it. That would be kind of beautiful in a way. So I like that thought. I don't think it's going to happen, but I played it out in my head and I like it.
Yeah, I like the logic. And I think that we're at the stage where a number of different options could happen, but we're just kind of trying to figure out what the most likely ones are based on what we know of the characters and where they're going to be heading off. Just going to pick up on a couple of things from the chat that I spotted as they went past. Thanks, guys, by the way. I see lots of really good questions and conversation going on there. I always say there are far more intelligent and knowledgeable people in the chat than there are talking here. So please do keep on coming out with that. I saw that one of my moderators put up a link to my Patreon. Thank you. I always say thank you to my patrons. I'm only able to do the amount of output that I can because of the support of my patrons. And so as a result, my Thursday live streams, I do live streams every Thursday at 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Not just through the season, but all through the year. That's when I prioritize questions for my patrons. So if you're interested in getting your questions answered, that's probably the easiest and best way of doing it. And we also had a question that one of my moderators picked out from Nicola Durican, a long-time viewer, saying, will Tyrion warn Danny about the potential betrayal Varys? I think this is a fascinating question. I did a video about Varys and his betrayal, and I think this is the big question to start off this episode, because basically Varys has told Tyrion that he's going to abandon, he's going to betray Dany, and he's going to try and get Jon onto the throne. And that to Dany would be treason. And so if Tyrion doesn't say anything and she discovers that Tyrion knew, then he would also be viewed as being guilty of treason. So this is a huge decision for Tyrion right at the very beginning. What does he do with that information? What do you think he would do, Axel? Do you reckon he will say something? Will he betray, effectively, will he betray Varys or Daenerys?
Well, first off, your video is awesome and everyone should go watch it. And I love the way that you give the background of Varys and all that. He's a fantastic and wonderful character portrayed by a magnificent actor. I think Tyrion would tell Daenerys, and I think he may already have. And I had an issue or something I noticed with the last episode. We have the whole scene between Tyrion and Varys, and he effectively says, I'll have to kill Dany to take her out. I mean, if you read between the lines, that's what he says. And on our podcast, if you download the last podcast, Heath and I acted out that whole scene between them, and I played Tyrion. And it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. But I really wanted to do it because I thought it was so important. And there's a part where at the end where Tyrion says, please don't. And that's what he's saying. Please don't do this because you're going to get yourself killed. I have to tell Daenerys about this. Look at the position you're putting me in. And I wonder after that, there was another scene. And then we went to the scene where they're meeting Cersei. It was kind of a time jump. So I wonder if something happened in between that time, because this show is fond of leaving off in an episode, something of that nature, something has to be decided, moving on, and then we see later that it was decided off screen, but we see the results of it. So it's possible that Dany already knows, or that if Tyrion hasn't had the opportunity to tell her, that Varys has already enacted a plan, and it may take place if we jump right back into the scene of Dany heading to her dragon, which is, I feel like we might. So yes, I think Tyrion would tell her. I think he might. And secondarily, a plan may have already come into action that we haven't seen either through Dany or Varys.
Yeah, I think that's very true. The showrunners do like doing this kind of like hiding a scene from you and then showing you something in a kind of a surprisey way. They're big fans of surprise, as you've probably noticed. And I would just add that someone was asking earlier about who was going to be first to die. That was anime lover Nicole. I think Varys is a very good chance to be the first to go. If he does get put in front of Daenerys by Tyrion, then she's already told us last season what she'll do. She's just going to burn him. And I think that we could see that reasonably early in the episode. Just picking up on a few super chats coming through. Sheeny Donuts saying, just supporting the channel. Thank you so much. Very nice artwork on podcast Winterfell's background. Oh. Yeah, he gets a lot of praise for this. I remember back in Westworld, we had people saying.
May I shout out the artists? Is that okay?
Yeah. Why don't I, when I next throw a question to you, why don't tell us a bit about that? I think that'd be good. Broken Bird says, honestly, I just want to hear Robert say my name in his finest voice on YouTube. Thank you. Amanda, thanks for all you do. Stephen Middle says, how would you see the future if Dany sat on the throne for the next 50 years, then John and maybe them together? So I personally don't think I don't think the Iron Throne is going to survive. I don't think Dany's going to survive. I don't think John wants the throne. I think those are the three things. I might be wrong about one of them, but I think at least two of those three things are going to happen. So the idea that Dany and John could rule together is the sensible one that politicians are talking about, but I don't think that that's going to happen. I do not think that the ending of this great story about how power, the thirst for power has caused so much carnage is going to be, well, we'll just put another person on the throne. I can't see that that's going to be the way that this ends. What do you think? So I'll throw a sort of open one off the back of that about who is, if anyone, going to be sitting on the Iron Throne. But then please, yes, also tell us a little bit about the art behind you.
All right. Well, I'll start with the art. This over here is my friend Craig Anthony Miller. He's a great Brooklyn artist and muralist. And if you've walked around Brooklyn and seen huge, like, block-long murals. He did them. He's amazing. And the one behind me actually was done for the movie Serenity from Firefly. I used to work at a video store called World of Video in Manhattan. It was the best video store in Manhattan. And my friend Lou did this, Ludwig Anton. And if you can look back, you can see that it's the people from Firefly. He also did the kind of weird alien creature on the door. So thank you for noticing. And that's awesome. Art is the best. Now, Robert, we couldn't agree more. That's why I always love talking to you. And thank you for the compliments on my voice. It's just natural. I think you have the best voice. And if you've ever heard Roberto,
such a loving,
it's well, it's true. Your voice is amazing, man. I almost fell asleep when I was listening to it last night. It's so soothing. And Roberto from A Pod of Cast has a great voice too. So we cover kind of all the accents of Game of Thrones a little bit. I'm probably from Flea Bottom because I'm the American, but that's all right. I think that I agree with you wholeheartedly. There is no purpose to having a story that began with Westeros being united by the dragonfire of Targaryens end with the same thing. That's the circle. That's the definition of what a wheel is, right? So I've never understood that from the beginning. Also, the idea that this show is about the people and is about shucking tradition, finding new tradition or finding truth in tradition, because tradition isn't always bad. Oaths, history, these are not bad things. These are the things that our ancestors worked hard to give us and sacrificed, and we should respect that. But we should also respect that, especially in this story, what has happened is people have in effect have become slaves to their tradition and slaves to their oaths, while the powerful do not follow those, and they use them as a tool to regain, to keep power or to take power. So how do I think Dany on the throne for 30 years would look? I'm not sure that she would be the worst leader, but I don't think that she would be the best, because I think quite often, as we've seen, her first instinct would be fly the dragons out. It wouldn't be, well, why don't we have emissaries there already talking to people? Why don't we have King's Landing should have embassies in all of the kingdoms, and they need a little structure here, right? That's why I like Sansa. They need a little sensible structure so people can communicate with each other and the needs of the people can be met.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the whole, you were talking about breaking the wheel. This is very much a show concept. They played with it quite a lot. And it's clear to me that when Dany was saying this, it isn't being used by her in the same way that we might think of it. Because when she says, I want to break the wheel, she is meaning she wants to end all of this time of one person, one house being on top, then another house being on top, and then another house being on the top. She wants it to be perpetual Targaryen rule. That's what she means by breaking the wheel. Now, what I think will breaking the wheel will actually mean is actually ending the whole thing, changing the way that this works. So it's not just about it being an absolute monarch who's in charge of everything, because as long as you have an absolute monarch who's in charge of everything, all through history, we see that other people want to take over. And so I think actually breaking the wheel does not mean, or should not mean, what Dany seemed to think it meant. Should actually mean something even more fundamental. Let's go to a couple of super chats. Thank you guys for so many wonderful super chats. Lucas Giorgio saying, could the capital move to Winterfell? Now, I think this is, I very quickly popped into, before my live stream goes on air, there's another fantastic one called Maui, Now Our Watch is Ending, which at the moment is on Bronsteris's channel. Perhaps one of, if you're watching live, perhaps one of the moderators could put a link into the chat there. They had a fantastic, him and Maester Emma had a fantastic chat about this idea about what might happen if King's Landing gets destroyed, if Sansa is in charge. Might she actually rule from Winterfell, rule the whole Seven Kingdoms from Winterfell. And Emma came out with a wonderful, I'll call it an obscure historical precedent, and I mean that in the best possible sense. If you're watching, Emma, it was when the English Parliament did move up to the north for a while. So there is a precedent for this happening in the real world. What do you make of that? Do you think that King's Landing will be destroyed, and do you think that actually the focus of power might move from the south up to the north?
I think this is an excellent idea. I think thematically it plays into exactly what we've been talking about. I think it plays into exactly who created King's Landing. It was Aegon the Conqueror, if I'm correct. I did read Fire and Blood. And to have it destroyed at the end is a beautiful symmetry to me. And I love this idea, whether it's Winterfell, I don't know. I love the cold. You know what I'm saying? I'm Irish. I like it to be cold, and I want it to be snowy and rainy and beautiful, but a little displaced from the rest of, a centralized location is probably better. So I could see them creating instead a new place where people come together. Because this is going to be a story of spring and renewal. So, Robert, you may know better than I an area more centralized that could serve as that has a history or thematically would serve as a good kind of new place, not of a ruler, but of where people can come together and rule together.
Well, geographically within the Seven Kingdoms, there's very clearly a central point thematically as well as actually just physically, which is the area when we talk about the Inn at the Crossroads. That is the point where you go south, you go to King's Landing, you go north, you go to Winterfell, you go west, you go to Riverrun, you go east, you go to the Eyrie. And that's why symbolically, why they keep on coming back to it, because it's a point of choice and it's a point where you can go in all the different directions of different parts. And that is right next to the Isle of Faces in the God's Eye Lake, which is huge in the books. They've not really picked up on the show, but it's huge in the books, probably the sort of the heart of the Weirwood network. And also Harrenhal. And Harrenhal was the great castle that survived for not very long at all, because Aegon the Conqueror basically just melted it. They have held there just by Harrenhal, as well as there being the tourney at Harrenhal that we know in the kind of the build-up to all of this, there was also a great council held there where they decided on who would be the king back in the time of Jaehaerys and things like that. So this is that whole area there is these central points. So if they had to go for a central point, it's there, but they haven't emphasized that on the show, so I don't think they're going to be going down that route. So, but I like this idea about perhaps moving up to Winterfell. I think, though, that we shouldn't get too caught up in this idea that the show is going to tell us exactly how the whole thing is going to be ruled and what the governance regimes are going to be going forward. I think that the two things, and we've already talked about Lost ending, the two things, I said this last week and I'll say it again, I'm sure, before the last episode, the two programs that the showrunners have a few times come back to as saying, these are the kinds of endings to shows that they like and therefore will be trying to replicate in feel, at least, are Sopranos and Breaking Bad. Now, if you've seen either of them, then you'll know that neither of those gave a long, detailed explanation about what happens next. So they are wanting to end at the point at which the dramatic storylines, the tension ends and has some kind of satisfaction and resolution, rather than necessarily telling us exactly what happens to each character afterwards. So I'm trying to warm people up to this idea that we might not get all of the detail we want about what happens afterwards.
I think that's, I just want to chime in and say, I think it's very funny in a meta way that they chose those, because David Chase is doing a prequel to The Sopranos that's coming out this summer.
And oh, wow. I didn't know.
Breaking Bad is getting a sequel on the AMC streaming service and Netflix, where they will have movies. So I guess, are they trying to tell us that they're leaving it open? But also a thing that both The Sopranos, I mean, Breaking Bad and The Sopranos too, exactly didn't really tell you. Sopranos, of course, really left things off, and Breaking Bad did, in a sense, though. Breaking Bad did one thing, is it left the universe alive for you, right? And without spoiling it, you in your mind could imagine characters living on. So I kind of like that, and I will go on record, we don't have to talk about it, but so everyone knows, I love Lost with all my heart and soul, and I love the ending, but it's okay that other people didn't. But I think Lost prepared me for this show, Robert. I'll tell you why. And it really prepared me for the Night King dying, because throughout Lost, they did a podcast, Damon and Carlton, and they told us every week, this show is about the characters. The mythology is fun. The world is fun. But in the end, we care about Jack and Juliet and Kate and Sawyer and Hurley. And in the end, Game of Thrones is about the characters. So we can have all the fun theories we want, and I have them too. But the people in the writing room and the people making this show and the actors too are most concerned with the emotional state and whether or not a person lives or dies, their well-being of the characters in the end. So that is something that I've been prepared for.
Yeah, so I think I agree definitely. This is about characters, and so yes. Once the character arcs, I talk about character arcs probably far too much, but once the character arcs have reached their end, that is it. Yes. That's where we're going to end up. So if you think about Jamie, perhaps we'll come on to him later. Where's his character arc going to end? It ends with him with Cersei, because that's where it started off. And then you get, what about Dany? Well, her character arc has to end with, does she get the Iron Throne or not? Because that's the thing that's been driving her all the way along. So if you just think about all of these different character arcs, it will end when the character arcs end. It's not going to say 20 years later, here's what happened. So be ready for that. Let me just pick up on a few super chats that have been coming through. D Doctor, thank you so much. I didn't see a question with that, but thank you. Scandalos says, who thinks there will be a Ford F-150 in tonight's episode of product placement? let's not go there. I think I'm not going to go there. I think we all know where that is coming from. Then what else did we have? David Colquitt says, Robert, you've been among my favourite Game of Thrones analysts for several years now. Thank you. Didn't Dany give Gendry an even better claim than Jon by legitimising him? I'll quickly pick up on that, as this is the kind of the nerdy bits that I get quite excited by. So in the show, in the books is going to be a lot more complicated, so I'm not going to get into the books. But in the show, they have been very clear that because Rhaegar married Lyanna, this means that Jon is a legitimate Targaryen, so he's the heir to the person who was the heir to the Iron Throne. That puts him, and they played this up when Dany even made the point that he is the only surviving male Targaryen heir, when they were talking about this, he is ahead of her in what is the usual Targaryen succession. So they've been quite clear about that Jon is technically on the Targaryen succession rights. He is technically ahead of her. Gendry has now been legitimized as Robert Baratheon's son. Robert, you would only say that he's got a right to it if you think that the Baratheon rule was the right one that you're going to follow. If you're going to go back to the Targaryen one, I think, probably technically, he's third in line, at least as far as the people we know, because it's a bit obscure, but his great-grandmother was a Targaryen, and we've not heard of anyone who's got a closer Targaryen link than that. So she may well have, without realizing it or thinking about it huge amounts, actually made him third in line to the throne by her own logic. So that's where we're at with it. But the main point here is that none of these lines of succession actually matter. What really matters is who's got the power to take the throne. That's what where all of this is. We saw that again and again, Fire and Blood Part 1, didn't actually matter who the heir to the throne was. It mattered who took it by force, and that happened. There was a succession crisis literally every generation in Fire and Blood Part 1, and there were battles and things going on about it. It's not just it's this person who's obviously going to have a takeover, then it's going to be that person, then it's going to be that person. It's never straightforward. So I'll throw this one at you, I think, Axel, which is from Lunkan Gaming, saying, what do you guys think about Bran becoming king? Yeah, I've had a couple of people throw this at me at Twitter, so maybe somebody's come out with a theory video about this one. But what do you reckon? Is there any chance Bran could become king?
You know what? I mean, I hadn't really considered it. I think you probably end up with a lot of babies cut in half, if you get that reference, because he's not exactly taking, as he said, he has no needs. He has no wants any longer. He's not really human. I don't really know if you want someone that doesn't have heart, that doesn't have soul, that can't empathize or sympathize with other human beings making decisions. It'd be rather like a robot. We could end up on Westworld in that situation, Robert. I don't know about that. But I can understand the idea that because he has such a link to all the history here, right, and what people have done right and wrong in the past, that he could be a valuable asset. But as a king, I don't see it.
Yeah, I think I would have never seen this until one probably throwaway line last episode when Tyrion says to him, you don't want to rule, or something along those lines. And that's the first time when they've played up with this idea that Jon would be a good ruler because he doesn't want to rule. Yeah. That's the first moment I thought, oh, are they setting up something here that, because he doesn't want to rule and because he clearly knows everything, would that make him a good ruler? I think for me, he would not be a good ruler. And I think I would be quite disappointed if he did end up on the Iron Throne. He certainly doesn't seem to be the person who's going to be putting himself forward for that. But we'll have to see on that one. Matty Jones, thank you so much, saying John will go north to the wall like season one. Yeah, we covered John going north a little while ago. I don't think he's going to go to the wall, so to speak. I think that he would go to the north, beyond the wall. That seems to be the implication of the invite anyway. Let's have a quick look. So Peter Rowan saying, hi, Robert from Washington State. Hi. Yours is the best intelligent discussion of Game of Thrones. Thank you. Do you think that Game of Thrones has suffered in the art of the story due to a truncated season? Slante, back at you. my take on this one, Axel, I'd love your thoughts on this, is that, yes, they have. It's not just the season. I think that that the last two or three seasons, they've truncated is probably the wrong word. Streamlined is probably the way I would put this. Streamlined the story in order to get to the end point. Now, we could speculate as to why that is. George R. R. Martin, in one of his slightly more off-guard moments, said that he had hoped that they might do, you know, three or four more seasons than they are going to do. So in his mind, the story justifies a little bit more. Do I think that the storytelling has suffered? I think, honestly, yes. But I think what has happened more is that they've changed the way of telling a story away from a literary adaptation, which it definitely was in the first four seasons. They took as much as they possibly could from the books. And that meant it was a lot more character-driven. It was a lot more plot development, intrigue, things like that. And then in the last two or three seasons has been a lot more TV show, and it's been effectively a story inspired by the books because they haven't got books to go on. And that has meant that they have told more TV-style things, like the whole Beyond the Wall. I've spoken about that far too much, so I'm not going to go on a rant about it, but that Beyond the Wall episode last season was a made-for-TV thing. that was the way that they thought that this would look good. They said it. They've said as much, that this is using their TV producer's skills rather than trying to do a literary adaptation. There's a flip side, which means that when it works well, it works really well. When Cersei was blowing up the Great Sept, I thought that was fantastic use of TV skills to build the tension with the music, with the moving from one place to another, the showing, not telling, as Marjorie's figuring out what's going on. I thought that worked fantastically. So it's not so much the truncation that's changed for me. It's the way that they've been doing the show has changed. But do you have any kind of like thoughts on that, how it's worked since they've not had the source material?
Robert, I think that your assessment there is a spot on, as they say across the pond. You're right, man. They had a safety net and they lost it. And their safety net became doing what they knew how to do or had learned how to do, make a television show. I think that definitely it became more TV than adaptation, as you described. I also think that HBO probably would have loved them to go on another 10 season, because guess what? We're going to get prequels and other and miniseries and movies and all that. This is their property. Disney has Marvel and Star Wars. HBO has Game of Thrones. There's something to be considered here that I want to mention, which is the amount of, on the production side, the amount of trust that the HBO brass, the suits as they call them, gave Dan and Dave. There's another very popular show, which at one point was the most popular show in the world, and that's called The Walking Dead. And AMC Networks, which owns AMC, decided to fire Frank Darabont when they felt he wasn't going in the direction that they wanted to elongate storylines. And in HBO's case, they decided not to do that. Now, you tell me, what's a better show, The Walking Dead or Game of Thrones? In my opinion, it's Game of Thrones. So we did lose something here by retaining Dan and Dave, which may have also had to do with the fact that Warner's was for sale and is now owned by AT&T and has a different mandate. If they were sold 5 years ago, Dan and Dave could have been fired, replaced with different showrunners, cast members could have left, there could have been strife behind the scenes. But now what we have is, yes, a truncated story. There's no doubt about that. And I do agree with that, even though I'm positive about the show. But what we do have is a company of actors and production people who love what they do, who love telling this story, and who are happy to tell it. It is a seamless line. So in my mind, the alternative is not what others perceive it to be. There is no other alternative. We have to accept what we have, and I think they've done a damn good job.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So this is what we've got, and yeah. I'm personally still enjoying it, and this is why I'm making videos about it, because if I was not enjoying it, I would not be making videos about it. Michael Whitten, thank you so much for your super chat. Annie Jones saying almost 4,000 watching. I think we're a little bit over 4,000 now. So, guys, welcome. If this is, by the way, your first time watching one of my live streams, welcome. I do these all the way through the year on Thursdays, so do check that out. So thank you very much. Congratulations on your success, Robert, says Annie. I love your solo streams on Thursday and loving your guest tonight. Yeah, I thought you guys would like Axel. He's top guy. I do like him. I can have him on again. I think actually we'll definitely be working together on Westworld season 3. I'll be covering Westworld season 3. They're filming it now, so my best guess is it's going to come out about this time, or maybe a little bit earlier next year. So definitely looking forward to that. Trinity Girl 007 says, do you think George is avoiding writing the final books because he knows people will hate the ending if it's like the TV show? No, I actually don't think that. I think that what he's doing with the books is he's just writing them at his pace and he's doing what he wants. I think that he is, although he's the kind of writer who says he just allows the story to tell itself and so he discovers it as he's going along, which is why he hasn't been able to say exactly when he was having the meetings with Dan and Dave, the showrunners, couldn't tell them exactly what was going to happen. at the end. But he has, and he's been very clear about this, he has been seeding all the way through the stuff that he has written where this is going. He's been giving little hints. There's bits of prophecy. There's little bits of foreshadowing, all of these kind of things. And so he is now set in the way that he's going to end this. He's not going to look at this and go, oh, people don't like it, therefore I'm going to change my ending. I think he knows where the ending is. He might tweak little bits here and there as he goes along, but he knows roughly where this is going to end. And a lot of what is happening, not the detail, but the sort of the big level things like the threat from the White Walkers being dealt with before what happens in King's Landing, that level of stuff, I am pretty sure is going to be the same in the books. Licardo Guida says, is Dany fit to be queen or being judged too harsh? I think at the moment we can't, as I said at the top, I think to call her mad is a complete misstatement of where she's at. She's mourning, she's angry, she's lost lots of people who mean a lot to her. So I think it's incorrect to call her mad queen at the moment. You can only judge somebody based on what they've done, and she hasn't had the chance to be queen yet, so I don't think we can judge her yet. And anime lover Nicole asks about who the Prince of Dawn is, because there was a little name check last episode, you might have missed it, where Varys says the new Prince of Dawn pledges his support. So who is this Prince of Dawn? Quentin, Ariana, are they married? Edric Dane, someone like an Ironwood, or as Dornish Dan said, Jose Martel. So the short answer is they didn't tell us. There always is going to be that somebody will claim the throne. We talk so much about families dying out and houses dying out and all the rest of it. Actually, in most, particularly with the Martells, huge family, there will be somebody taking over. So I suspect that the show, they won't make a big deal of it. We might see this new Prince of Dawn at some point. We might even get a name, but I think to all intents and purposes, they are going to be generic Dornish prince. They might give them a name. Maybe it's going to be one of Oberyn's many bastard children. Quentin and Ariana, they are book characters who are quite important in the books, but weren't translated across onto the show. As far as I can tell, they just went with one son there, Tristane. So maybe they will just discover another one. I don't actually think it matters. They might give a name, but I don't think that they're going to have the character that we've seen in the books. Rene Moncao saying the council wasn't a bad idea. Also dive diagonally. And then Sir Brynden Shivers the Cool says, could Edric Dane be the new Prince of Dawn? So that's just a following up for what I was saying a moment ago. I think Edric Dane, so he comes, he's a book character. He's the son of, or the heir to the Dane, House Dane, when you may or may not know, Arthur Dane was one of the knights who was defending the Tower of Joy in that flashback. So he's from that same family. The Danes aren't really connected. They were hundreds of years ago, but they're not really connected to the Martells. So probably the new Prince of Dawn is not going to be a Dane. Let's get this, your thoughts on this one then, Axel. Guy Smulders says, is there a parallel between the Gold Cloaks who betrayed Ned in season one, as on Littlefinger's orders, and the Golden Company who might betray Cersei for Jon or Dany Targaryen? So I'll throw that one to you. Do you think there's a link? And do you think that the Golden Company, Kyle, who collaborate with from time to time, Azura Hype, do go and check out his channel. Both he and JR from Geek Chat One, both excellent people. They've both done videos about the idea that the Golden Company might betray Cersei. So what do you think, Axel? Do you think they might?
Well, I want to note that I put a hat on. I know LML does wig changes, but I just wanted to have my Staten Island direwolves hat to support Ghost. I think that that's an interesting idea. And actually, I did a live stream with, or Tim did with Johnny B. Crazy, and he had the idea that maybe Varys had already paid them off. That part of when he went, you know, when he did his kind of travels and gathered people up, that may have been part of what he did. I think that's an interesting idea. The show loves to foreshadow. They love to mirror. They love to bring things back around. So if the Golden Company ends up turning on Cersei, I think that would be marvelous. I also noted from the first time that we saw the leader of the Golden Company that that guy has such a face on him, Robert, doesn't he? I mean, like, he's just, that is casting. You don't cast a guy with that face if he's not going to do anything but stand there the whole season. That's a little meta there, but I just think that he looks like he's there to do something important, whether it's to help, you know, sack the city on Cersei's orders or turn against her. I could see either one happening.
It's a good point about the casting. I think that what they've tended to do is have a face for each of the armies. Yeah. So we saw Grey Worm, obviously, is the face of the Unsullied. They've often had a face of the, the Dothraki, so that we can see one person there at the council table and things like that. They like having a face to an army. So there's definitely that element to it. I do wonder whether this might be, although I love these theories that they might sort of turn coach, and I think that the Varys one is the one that makes the most sense because he clearly will have a plan because that's what he's about. So he will want to turn some people. But if we are going to have a battle in King's Landing, then at the moment you just got generic gold cloaks unless they had that one face, as we said, because the other characters that we know about on Team Cersei, Euron, who seems to be probably going to be on his boat. Cersei's going to be in the Red Keep. She's not going to be fighting on the streets. The Mountain's going to be guarding her, and Qyburn's going to be somewhere nearby. And I suspect, random prediction, I suspect he's going to get it out of there as soon as he realizes that it's all going to just come collapsing around. I think he's going to survive. But if we have anyone who's going to be the face of Team Cersei in the battle, it's going to be Harry Strickland. So that's where I go with this one.
What a name. Isn't he in a boy band, Harry Strickland?
Harry Styles.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got confused.
So One Direction fans will be aghast at you mixing the two of them up.
I'm an old man.
Although they're both very pretty, I have to say. Scandalos, I will throw this one to you. Dany is mad with entitlements, says Scandalos, and vengeance in her heart. Sansa doesn't trust her and is concerned for her people. Please discuss who is more deserving of our love and why so many are stuck on Dany. So what do you make of that?
Well, you know, I think that why so many people are stuck on Dany, people have an affinity to different characters in a story and they associate their own life with it. And that's why we love these stories. So when someone really defends Dany, and as you've said, this week, there's been a discourse among critics and fans concerning the idea of the Mad Queen. Or in essence, there has been throughout the history of film and television a trope of a woman acting crazy, right? The woman's mad, the woman's crazy. And it's something that for a long time defined film, right? I mean, you have like whole genres based on it. So I can understand people's reluctance to see something that they want to see as our high art now fall into that same trope. But I agree with you, Robert. I don't think it is. I don't think she's mad. I think she's isolated, alone, and acting in a way that we've seen this character act previously. I do think that there are people who think that Dany will make a right choice, or that even if she does use the dragons, it is finally the right choice to make, because as you have mentioned, her advisors have always cautioned her against it and she's wanted to do it. So maybe she has to follow her true path, you know, that's what we're seeing. But I like Sansa, and I don't love Sansa. I'm not like in love with the character. I just like her as a representative of a more balanced view, a more holistic view of, in order for things to work, we have to worry about the small details, how people get water, how people eat, right? As well as the big details, where we're going to fly the big magical dragon. So that's why I kind of like I'm a little more on the Sansa side there, even though I do like Dany. And who knows, Robert, we could be totally wrong. And she gets above King's Landing. She's about to yell Dracarys. And she looks down and sees some little kids playing. And then that's when the bolt hits the dragon.
Yeah, I think we shouldn't judge Dany before she's done the things that they're building her up to do. They're building her up to a decision point. That much is clear. But until then, we can't. And I think that was a really valuable and valid point you were making about the fact that people buy into these characters. And they buy into them because something about those characters chimes with them and who they are and what their life experience is in some way. And so I think when people dismiss characters in some way or sort of come up with hyperbole to do them down in some way, then we have to be aware that there are people in the community who are attached to those characters because they see something of them and their experience in them. So it's just a sort of a low-key appeal for calm, I would say. If any of these characters do things we particularly hate, by all means have views on them, but do be aware of other people's feelings. Joseph Fireborn saying, can't think of a question. What would you like to see happen in the episode? I think Dany needs to be a dragon. So this is a theory that actually one of my fine moderators has championed, is the idea that Dany may turn into a dragon. I don't think they're going to go that way, but who knows? It's certainly possible. And thanks for introducing us to Axel. Yeah, I'm glad you're appreciating his input. Bill Rowett says, if this ends in a cliffhanger in any way, it will be the worst of all possible endings, in my opinion. It is totally unfair to the fans who have invested 8 years in the show. Yeah, I think if this is building up, building on what we were talking earlier, I don't think that they're saying they're going to end with a cliffhanger. I think that they're going to try and end with dramatic resolution and not then show us what all of the things that happen after that might be. So we're not going to get a detailed list of how the new world is going to be organized and who's lord of this and lord of that and all the rest of it. I think that they're just going to allow the dramatic resolution to end, and that's the point that they'll end it while we're still kind of reeling. We see that again. So, for example, episode 3, if you forget everything that happened before it, the point they ended it with was Melisandre walking out into the snow and collapsing. Now, they could have ended it anywhere, but they wanted us to end with that thought because the dramatic end point for her, the resolution point for her, was the end of that battle. She had done her thing, and therefore there was nothing else for her to do. That was all her character was ever about. That is where they're going to be taking us, to the point where that ends, and then they'll fade to black in some way. So that's what I mean. It's not that there is going to be a cliffhanger about what's going to happen. It's going to be about achieving that dramatic resolution. Stephen Michael Davis, thank you so much, saying Aaron Rodgers, the true king in the north, will be making an appearance tonight via cameo.
Did he say Aaron Rodgers?
Yes.
He's the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, Robert.
Excellent.
And that is the northern
reference I did not get.
They're in the NFL. They're in the northern division. And I have to say, I'm a New York Jets fan, but I love Aaron Rodgers, so that would be very cool.
Excellent. I'm glad I had you here to interpret that for me. It's otherwise it would have gone. Perhaps he's making a cameo. Keep an eye out. Brian Smith, thank you so much. Just saying, keep up the good work. Jeremy Seibert saying, what if the throne is melted to a table for seven? I like that idea. I think that the throne will be destroyed. It was forged in the fires of Balerion the Black Dread, who is the precursor or the image of Drogon. So it makes sense to me that Drogon's fire will melt and destroy the Iron Throne. Dany herself is just like this mirror of Aegon the Conqueror. Her dragon is the mirror of Aegon the Conqueror's dragon. He was the one who created the Iron Throne, so it works for me in a kind of a symmetry way, a plot symmetry way, if it is destroyed by Drogon. So that's where I kind of see it. Whether it will be melted into a table for seven, I like the idea. I'm not sure that they will necessarily take that. As I've been saying, whether they will actually show us that bit going forward, I think that they may well just end thematically with that bit of it, with the throne being destroyed. Ruthie says, when do you think we will see Rhaegar Targaryen? I mean, I would love to see Rhaegar Targaryen. He would have to appear in the flashback, obviously. But I honestly think, how would this add to the plot? Is the question. So the way that they've used Bran's kind of flashbacks is to reveal information to us that will help us understand what's going on. So he went back, he's seen Rhaegar in the past because he needed to learn that Jon's true parents were married, that he was legitimate, things like that. There is no plot reason I can see for us seeing Rhaegar again. So if he does, unless there's some huge twist that we're not necessarily expecting, that it would be nice but indulgent and unnecessary, I think, for us to be seeing him again. But let's go to a question that I think the fandom have been asking for a long time. And so, Axel, if you could answer it once and for all for us now. Arya or Jaime as Queenslayer? Axel, are you there? Okay, it looks like Axel's just gone away, and we'll be back in a moment. So we'll come back to that question, and I will just pick up on Aaron Pete saying, or in fact, actually, very quickly, GooseCon Gaming saying, shout out to my mum Mary, happy Mother's Day. P.S. Tormund is the king of the real North. Happy Mother's Day for anyone who's in America. If you are a mother, if you are mourning the loss of a mother, or you know mothers, I hope you have a fantastic day. So thank you very much for the super chat. Aaron Pete saying, do you think Jorah's funeral pyre will be Danny's third fire, or still think there's one for John somewhere down the road? So, well, they've not. This is, for those who don't know about Danny's third fire, this was the visions that we saw in the House of the Undying. In the books are very different to what we saw on the show. On the show, they're very clear. There was the whole one about her walking through King's Landing, reaching out, not quite touching the Iron Throne, things like that. In the books, they're a lot more complicated. There are a lot more of them. They're sort of flashing past her at this rate of knots. And part of this is this idea that she must light three fires. And she lights a lot of fires, but most of them through her dragons. And the first fire that she has lit herself was Drogo's funeral pyre. The second one we saw, if you remember, when she was recruiting all of the Khalasar, and she was there, and the meeting house in the middle burnt down and all the carls burnt down. That was the second fire that she herself lit. The third fire, I've had a theory, you can see a video from it ages ago, called, I think it's called something like Will John Kill Daenerys? And in that, I theorized as a book theory, because this is a book thing rather than a show thing, that perhaps he could stab her in the heart, and that would set his sword alight in a kind of an echo of the old Azor Ahai myth that they sort of come out with a lot in the books. So that was what I think in the books the third fire is. On the show, I do not think that they have played up this idea of her having three fires, so I don't think that necessarily that's something that we should be looking out for, a third fire. So That was quite a booky question, but I'll come back to see. Axel, you're back, so I'm going to throw the question to you that I missed just a moment ago, which is, can you finally answer for us the question, or one of the questions the fandom have been asking for a long time, Arya or Jaime as the Queenslayer?
Wow. How about Jaime, but he takes off his face and it's Arya? How does that grab you?
I like it.
I think I've had this theory, and it really comes from more of a TV perspective, that they could do something like that where someone would kill Cersei and then they'd remove their face and it's Arya, and then we're hit with the second, oh my gosh, that person's dead too. We didn't know that. So it's like a double realization. But I'm actually more of a fan. If I had to pick between the two, I'd say Jaime. I think it makes more sense to me. It's something that I think I would feel more at home with. Not that I want to feel at home with somebody killing their sister that they had incest with, but I kind of think Cersei's going to take out herself. I'm kind of a fan of this dragonfire idea, or wildfire, I should say, or she is, her back is up against a wall. So I'm not so sure that kind of the top two contenders are Arya and Jaime. I'd probably go more with herself, and leading the back of the pack, a long shot, is Qyburn, because he is someone who at least has some sort of connection to Cersei, right? He's talked about how she helped him, how she raised him up. So often in a story, when you see someone talk with such affection for another person, and the person speaking is kind of crazy, they might end up killing that person. So I could see Cersei acting in a way, or for perhaps fulfilling the Jaime role that we saw from the Mad King time, and taking her out.
Yeah. So I think in the books, this is my position, has been for a while in the books, is that Jaime's arc naturally ends with him coming back to Cersei, and an echo of the Kingslayer thing that he did to save King's Landing. He killed the king, and I could see that echoing here with him killing Cersei to save King's Landing if she's trying to blow out with wildfire. That has been my position, what seems most likely in the books at the moment. I thought initially that they wouldn't go with that because they've been taking Jaime's arc slightly different way on the show. So I then, before this season, got into this, changing my mind on this all the time, you see, got into this pattern of thinking that Arya would probably do it. I liked the idea that you came out with the it was Arya pretending to be Jaime, because obviously this is to do with ending Arya's kill list, which she's had all the way from season two. So that was where I was at. Now, however, she's killed the Night King. I think that was her big moment. I don't think they'll have her killing the Night King and killing Cersei. So I've now moved back, particularly with Jaime heading south, I've now moved back to the idea that Jaime's going to do it. So that's where I'm at. I've moved around a little bit, but at the moment, my favourite is Jaime. A couple of things in the chat. Peter Broughton saying, hi, I'm new here. Welcome. And then Diane the Wolf Panther saying, you forgot that she lit up the Slaver's fleet. Yeah, so she did, as I say, the point about the fire was these are fires that she personally lights. Not with her dragons. She kills lots of people with her dragons. Sam's family, she killed the warlocks over in Carth, obviously the slavers, things that lots of people die with dragon fire. But that's a matter, and this is a book thing rather than the show thing, but that's a matter for of which fires does she personally light rather than just get her dragons to light. So that was answering quite a long way round. But Aaron Pete said, do you think Jorah's funeral pyre will be Dany's third fire? So that is something that she did personally light, but I don't think that that's necessarily the same going to be in the books as the show. G. Joe saying, off topic, thanks to the Well Told Tale channel. that I've bought and read Call of Cthulhu and other H.P. Lovecraft novels. So thank you for your work, Robert. You're a good man, as Bran would say. I hope this doesn't mean I have to go and charge at the Night King. But thank you. For those who don't know, I have a second channel, which is called The Well-Told Tale. There is a link down in the description. That is, it's a little bit of a passion project for me, to be honest. I love audiobooks. I love audio narration. And I absolutely love classic science fiction and fantasy, the kind of things that are just the staples of the genre that I adore. And so basically it's a channel of me just narrating the stories that I love. And we're going through all of the classics. As I say, we've done Call of Cthulhu, we did Frankenstein, we've done a whole load of stuff. At the moment, we're working our way through The Time Machine by H.G. Wells, which is a fantastic story. So if you're at all interested in that, please do go check the link down in my description. And thank you very much. It means a lot to me that you can be exposed to new authors, new stories through that. And the fact that you've gone off and bought other H.P. Lovecraft things is fantastic. I am really pleased. So hang on, I just need a quick sip. Let's go back to Tyrion. So Tara W. says, Tyrion said, please don't, Daenerys. Don't kill. Did he mean, so this is something you were picking up on, Axel, so love your thoughts on this one. Did he mean don't kill Dany or don't get yourself killed by Dany? Which way do you think he was going with this?
I think that it's entirely possible to read that line both ways, that he's saying to him, please don't do this. Don't kill Dany. Don't go down this road of treason. Or he's also saying, because previously he had said to him, you're discussing treason. So it had been brought up that he was, and it had kind of already been brought up, that he was secondarily saying, look, I told you, don't do this, because this could spend the end for you. You know what's happening here. We're having a high-level conversation. So I think it could be read either way, and we're going to find out this episode.
Yes, I think I would agree. I think this is very much a thing. I think he meant it, don't do this, because of all these different things going to happen. I think they both knew, they're both clever people, they both knew what the implications were of what Varys was suggesting, and Tyrion was just saying, just don't. Arlene Jasmine says, no question, just wanted to say great live stream, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tom Davies says, super chat on behalf of Matthew Bacon. I love it when people do super chats on behalf of someone else. There's the chat is moving so quickly, it's really hard to keep up with everything that's there. So super chats, I know that I can see because they get highlighted. And it's incredibly generous when people pick up on questions and comments from people and do a super chat on their behalf. But this just simply says something wine related. So I have got my quite a dinky little glass of wine that I... If you're a regular viewer and you know, I leave that generally for the end of the stream. Once we're all finished, as a little reward for myself, but I leave it just to one side in case I need courage halfway through. But thank you so much. Stan Tahee says, what do you think will be the third big twist? Now, this is an interesting question. So for those who don't know, Dan and Dave, the showrunners, they said that when they did have these chats with George R. R. Martin about... what's going to happen. There were three twists, three WTF moments, three things that just really caught them by surprise. Now, they've said two of them are the Hodor moment, or the door, Shireen being killed, and the third one, as of whenever they were saying this, hadn't happened yet. So there is somewhere within this season a big twist that we're not expecting. Now, I haven't heard them say whether or not... One option is that was the Arya killing the Night King thing, which, you know, has many views on it. I don't think anyone can deny that it was surprising. It caught us all slightly, whoa, what happened there? So that's one possibility. The question is, could there be another thing coming up that's more of a plot twist with things that you weren't expecting, rather than just a here's how the battle ends kind of thing. So what do you reckon, Axel? It's going to be a third twist. What do you think that might be?
Well, I mean, the thing that pops into mind right away is something that you had discussed briefly here, which is that John having to be put in a situation to kill Danny. That's kind of going around. I think people look at the prophecies as are outlined in the book, but are not really a huge part of the show. It seems like both of these things are sacrifices, right? So Could we see a sacrifice? Someone sacrifices themselves. Could it be John? Could it be Danny? A crazy theory that I've heard, which I kind of thought, wow, that would be pretty interesting, is if Danny dies and John brings her back, John tries to use the same powers that brought him back to bring her back, and they kind of rule as the undead couple. I don't know, because those are very interesting points, aren't they, Robert? They weren't the Red Wedding, or you know what I mean, or some major. These are actually things. Shireen is not the biggest thing in the world, but it meant a lot to the story. So that makes me more interested than, ooh, there's a big battle or something. I like those character moments that turn the way you see the story or a person.
Yeah, and Sophia Lambert in the chat saying Arya killing the Night King was the showrunners, not George R.R. Martin, so I don't think it's the third twist. Yeah, I agree completely with that. I think that's a really good point, is that these are things that they say they learned from talking to George R.R. Martin, and we've heard very clearly from them that the Night King as a character was a character that they invented, and Arya killing the Night King was a thing that they came up with. So that is not the third twist. So thank you for that. That's a useful clarification. I mean, I'm not a gambling man. If I were, then I think the most likely one is something to do with John and Danny. And this idea, I was talking about it a moment ago in the context of this is in the books, that I think this might happen with John killing Danny. It's possible, and it's possible because they have set it up on the show. Now, the question about whether Danny is going to go mad or not, if she does start doing things that are easily seen as being evil or wrong or destroying innocent lives, that kind of thing, then people will start turning on her. People who, like John, will go, this person should not, or has to be stopped, this person should not be ruler. And that would be a huge twist, I think. Pardon me. I think it would echo a lot of where the books might be coming from on this. Not necessarily done in the same way, but I think that as a twist, it would appear shocking, and it would also fit with where they've set this up last episode. There is a rift between John and Danny. We've seen that, and we've seen that they're setting her up to at least get to that decision point about whether to do really bad things. If she does, somebody's going to try and stop her. That much is clear. What do you? So you are you in line with that as a most likely thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that if it's hard, I would find it hard for something of that to occur in this particular episode. Maybe that's something for the next one that they build up to. That would be rather fast. But as you outline her taking action in King's Landing, being emboldened by it, and then people having to kind of come to Jon, whether it's Varys, whether it's other people, Tyrion even, Sansa, of course, saying you've got to, you know, put her in check, and then she doesn't listen and she rejects him too because of the fear of him using his lineage to usurp her. They have set it up. So I could see it happening, and boy, that would be quite a moment, wouldn't it? I would have to stay off Twitter for at least 48 hours.
Yeah, I think that it would be a big plot twist, and it really depends on how they deliver it, whether they could pull that one off. Sir Brendan Shivers the Cool, great name, says, thanks for taking my question. This super chat is just to support your traveler's guide to Essos. It's sure to be excellent. For those who don't know, one of the things I do on this channel, it was on a weekly basis for about a year, I did the traveler's guide to Westeros, which is my take on exploring the world of Westeros that George R. R. Martin has given us. And I do it in a slightly different way as a traveler's guide, as a sort of a world-weary traveler going around and just experiencing things. So it's not just about what's the history of a place. It's what does it look like? What does it smell like? How does it feel? What's going on? Is it hot or cold? Just to try and evoke the senses about what places are like in that world. And just before this season, we reached the end of Westeros. So we'd done Westeros. We might nip back there a little bit later, but we'd done all of the main places in Westeros. So as of the end of the season, in a couple of weeks' time, I will be starting the Traveller's Guide back up again, going to be doing the Traveller's Guide to Essos. So we're going to start off in Braavos. It's my favourite city in the whole of the Game of Thrones world. And we're going to do three or four Traveller's Guides within Braavos. We're going to look at the House of Black and White, the Sea Lord's Palace, the Iron Bank, all things like that. So thank you so much. I really enjoyed doing the Traveller's Guides there. Creative outlet for me as well as a great chance to explore the world. So thank you. I'm looking forward to that. Charlie Moreno says, podcast Winterfell, great insights. Lost was one of my favorite shows as well. Let's not get trapped up too much into whether or not we like Lost, but what about Tyrion becoming king? Hashtag Parliament/breaking the wheel. What do you think about this idea then, Axel? Do you think Tyrion might become king?
Well, first off, thank you everyone in the chat for the kind words. I really do appreciate it. And, you know, it's just Robert making me look good because this guy is the best. I do appreciate it all, though. You know, Tyrion has a marred history, doesn't he? He hasn't always given the greatest advice. He seems to be really, as Dany had feared, swayed by his family. And even in the way he spoke to Cersei, oh, come on, I know you have a heart. That wasn't the right way to go. It obviously didn't work out. I think that in theory, Tyrion sounds like, if you look at on paper, he looks like he would be a good ruler or prime minister in some way. But I don't really think that's the life for him. I don't think that he has it in him to remain kind of even keeled through all of this. And maybe he has just seen too much and there's been too much trauma. And that's something that I often talk about on our podcast, which is that's so much what this story is about. And some people in this story are broken and they're lifted back up. But I think Tyrion may just need to kind of go off and find Thanos's cottage or something and just chill out for a little while, relax, if he makes it through. But I don't really think that Tyrion would really be the best person to rule. And actually, I have a kind of a favorite that I really like, who I think has been a better hand, which is Davos, baby. I'm a big fan of Davos. I think, this is a guy who wanted to kill Melisandre, who hated the magic. It killed his son. But when Jon died, he did what had to be done. He went to Melisandre and he said, give it a shot. It's all we got. You know, he's not constrained by his prejudices or even his past experiences. He's open to new things. I'm a big Davos fan. And plus, the actor gives the best reaction shots in the business. Every time something happens in the show, they cut to Davos.
Yeah, and I think it was perfect the way at the end of episode 3 it was him, it's his perspective that we saw of Melisandre disappearing and dying in the snow, and that for me worked perfectly. I know some people didn't like Melisandre's end. I think that worked really well, particularly allowing us to see through his eyes and question, what do we now think about her? And not going to spoon feed us the answers, but what do we think Clearly, she's done some horrendous things, but clearly also she was important in that battle. Where does that leave us? Just on the Tyrion thing, Stantahe in the chat points out Stephen King thinks that there's a possibility that Tyrion might become king. Yeah, he did tweet out about this, I think, a week or so ago. And Stephen King clearly knows a thing or two about telling a good story. And he was just playing with the idea that maybe Tyrion would end up. I think I would tend to agree with you that that's not where his story's going to end. Certainly on the show, he's not been in the last season, two seasons, maybe three seasons, he's not been the person he was before. So it would be quite a turnabout for him to suddenly become king. But in Meereen, when he and Varys were ruling it during peaceful times, they actually did a really good job. It just went to pot that, you know, then they got attacked. They turned that around. I think that if he survives, I would want Tyrion to be part of the team going forward, because he's clearly got a lot of great administrative skills. Maybe he could be the person, master of the coin, who's in charge of the money. Maybe Davos could be hand of the king or queen. There. Stay York saying, please congratulate Sheffield United and Stockport County for both gaining promotion for their respective divisions this year. Sheffield United to the Premiership, Stockport to the National League. Niche football, this is real football, American, sorry. Niche football, okay. Shout outs there. But yeah, well done, guys. That's good. I'm not, as a Man U fan, I'm not really big on the Premier League at the moment, but these things come in circles. Give it next season. Yeah. Let's pick up with Matty Jones, who says, all men must die is a clue. So this is Lana Allen. So I should say this is Lana Allen doing a super chat on behalf of Matty Jones. Again, thank you. I really love it when people doing that say, all men must die is a clue. So do you think everyone will die?
Tyrion was in the room, and remember when they were in having the old fireside chat, and he said, wouldn't it be funny if we all survived? And they did. And then last episode, he said, or we could all burn and die. So, maybe they will all die, or maybe in a sense that is a metaphor for this story, which has seen a lot of the strong men die and the rise of women. You have the most powerful people left in this story really are women right now. And who killed the Night King? Arya. So there's a little bit of a hint there. And if you know about George and his history and his wife and even how they met, my understanding is they met in my fair city of Portland, Oregon, right here, which, by the way, is the soccer capital of America. We call it soccer. I'll call it football for you. That's fine. I'm a big fan.
It's played with a foot and a ball. Yeah. It works for me.
My son, I had to have a 20-minute conversation. He said, I don't get it, Dad. Why do they call it football? They throw it. But, we'll have to see what happens.
Absolutely. Yeah. The throwing games is more hand egg is the way I see that one. Ryan Schaub saying apologies for anyone who likes American football. Thoughts on Varys being the end game seems like the most unresolved story arc. Also give a shout out to your viewer named SJ. Hi SJ. So a quick shout out for you. Thoughts on Varys being the end game and his unresolved story arc. Yeah. So, this is, for all my talk of Varys is probably going to be one of the first to die this episode. What do you think his story arc is? Because where does the resolution to it come? Is there anything that needs to happen before he can die in order for the story to work? What do you reckon on that one, Axel?
Well, you know, I think that Varys' arc is one, and you made your great video, everyone should check it out, where he's always played the politics. He's rose up from nothing, and he's played the politics at a high rate. I mean, he's been, involved in five different kings and queens, right, up to this point? Mm-hmm. And I think that the conclusion of his arc is very well put into what's happening with him and Tyrion. This could be the last time he gets involved in politics at this level and sticks his nose into it or tries to push it in one way or the other in the name of the realm, and it ends his life. So it's always been a high wire act that he's played, going back to the great discussions that he used to have with Littlefinger, where they talked about that. And in the end, it's the Game of Thrones, right? You play or you die. And I think that he's probably headed the way of the dying part.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that so he hasn't really had an arc in the books. He's very much tied in with a very complicated plot to get this third potential Targaryen onto the throne. And so that is where his arc is taking him there. On the show, they've missed out that whole thing with Fagon, Aegon, and the whole sort of Dornish plot going on. So because that's come out, Varys's kind of storyline has sort of flatlined, in my view. That's that he's just sort of gone along and he's surviving rather than anything else. So I think he's one of the few characters who hasn't got so much of a story arc towards the end of it. It's just that, as I said in that video, it's very, very noticeable that all of the ruling elite at the beginning of the show, all of the leaders of the main houses, every member of the small council, the Lord's Commander of the Night's Watch and of the King's Guard, the High Septon, the Grand Maester, every single person at the top at the beginning of the show is dead, except Varys. Yep. Varys is the last member of that original ruling cast. And I think that he, in order for there to be a new start, he has to also go. So I think, if anything, that's what is left with his character arc, is that he has to be the last remaining person of this, how the Game of Thrones operated. Because he is somebody who plays the Game of Thrones. Crochet Nerd, I don't want this to get distracted too much into sports chat, but Crochet Nerd saying, what do those in the UK call baseball, aka the greatest sport that America has come out with? We have a child sport called rounders, and we tend to think of it as being like your version of that, but with more helmets and things. So Alex Mora, thank you so much for your super chat. I think, guys, we're going to go for about another 10 minutes or so. So if you've got any more questions, now is the time to drop them into the chat. My Celb is on fire says, would like to shout out to Tom Davies for shouting out Matthew Bacon, who couldn't donate tonight. We'll have a drink whilst watching tonight in your honour. Well, yeah, absolutely. It's getting slightly meta here with people shouting out people for shouting out other people, but thank you so much. Well, as I say, we've got about 10 more minutes. So, Axel, what's your overall thought then on, if you could give us a slightly different slant on this next episode, where do you think it's going to end? Now, this is the thing. When I was coming out with my sort of preview for the episode, this was the bit that I couldn't quite work out, because clearly there's going to be a big confrontation in King's Landing. Is there enough plot for the final episode, episode 6, with just tying up the loose ends afterwards? Is this going to end with there's the Battle of King's Landing and then the end of it? Or is it going to be slightly more free-flowing? I hope that's kind of a vague question, but I think it's the where's the dividing line between episodes 5 and 6 in your mind?
Well, I mean, this is a great question, and it's on everyone's mind, because at the same time that we fear that we may have been, we may have lost extended episodes, more episodes, a longer season, we're also looking at this and saying, oh my gosh, there's only two more episodes left. You know, like, they got it. They only have this much time. They have to do it. They have no choice. You had kind of said offhanded that they might, you know, that it might be kind of, you didn't really think that they would kind of jump ahead in the final episode, but I think that there's a chance that they might. I do think that there's actually a chance that we could see our current story, or at least the battle portion of it, right? Cersei or Dany both taken out, and this ends. and the final episode is several years later or involves the politics of actually putting things together and living on. That is a possibility. The other possibility is that this episode, Dany kills Cersei, or Cersei inadvertently kills herself, the wildfire. Dany is left as the queen, and then we have Jon versus Dany. And the final episode is them figuring that out and people choosing sides. I don't feel like that would end in some big, huge battle. I think it might end with a conversation in a quiet room, you know, much as this series began. I think that we're coming back around to that. Either way, I would not mind the jumping ahead. Ken, who's a frequent guest, and he used to have a podcast called Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things. He's going to be back with me this week. We're going to record a podcast on Wednesday. He was really in love with the idea of them jumping forward because he thinks it signals a new spring, right? Now, isn't the last book called, is it called A Song of Spring? Is that what it's called?
A Dream of Spring.
I like that. A dream. So maybe it'll be like a dreamlike moving forward. It could also, Robert, let me bring this into play here, and I don't want to get people too excited, but I'm not particularly convinced that the magic is over. Bran still has a mark on his arm. I think that there's something to be said for him carrying the memories of the world with him. Whether the dragons survive or he, what kind of balance magic must have. There is a chance here that we get something totally out of the blue. You know, an adventure that has to take up the last episode that has to do with magic.
Yeah, I think there's a chance. I think the slant I would take on this one is I've forgotten his name, but the director of episode 3 is the same person who's directing episode 5. And I think it was Michael Sapochnik.
I believe it is.
I saw an interview with him, and he said that he views, having seen the scripts, that he views episodes 3 to 5 as being a kind of a self-contained unit.
Yes, yeah.
That's, I find, fascinating, because it means that episode 6, therefore, is sort of standalone or different from this. And the way I see it or interpret this as being episode 3 is this big battle up at Winterfell, episode 5 is the big battle down at King's Landing, and episode 4 was the kind of the bridging between the two, which we saw. That's when people were starting to travel down. So I think that we will see the battle at King's Landing, and that be the resolution to that. And then, so episode 6 is going to be the aftermath in some way. And the question is, what needs to be done? Clearly, there are going to be some people betraying some other people. There will be some characters who we think might need, like Euron. I've still got a sneaky suspicion that Euron and Yara need to have some kind of final showdown. So that might happen. So there's a lot of loose ends. I think that's where we're going to be going with that. Got a couple more super chats. And also my moderators, thank you so much for, you've been doing a fantastic job today. Thank you. Could you just pick up on, and I'll keep an eye out for you in the chat, if you could perhaps pick up on a couple of questions just randomly from the chat that you think it might be good for us to end on. But in terms of the super chats, Leathery Wings says, thank you for the exceptional chat. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. SoSo03 says there is a close-up shot of Drogon we see in the Season 8 trailer where he blows fire with darkness around. Do you think we will see that scene in the show? Yeah, they set that up in the preseason trailer. They put it as very much that they showed the shot of Tyrion looking up, and then they had a shot of Drogon looking down and breathing fire. And it was like, oh, are they trying to say that Drogon's going to breathe fire on Tyrion? That was very clearly a jump cut between two things in an attempt to make us think that, but they were different scenes. My best guess now, don't know if this is going to happen, but my best guess now is that that is a shot of Drogon, because they're clearly wanting us to see either killing a very important character, because we're seeing it from their perspective, or destroying the Iron Throne. Those are the two things that I could see possibly happening. Drogon is going to be destroying something with fire, and I think that that image is from this episode. But I think it's, I mean, it could be Varys, I guess, because he did, Danny did promise to be killing Varys if he'd ever betrayed her, and he has. What do you think? Who do you think that Drogon might be toasting?
Well, you know, the way they cut those trailers, it really, as you said, it really could be anybody at this point. I like the idea that you said that it's somebody important. It could be Cersei. It could be when Dany decides to lay waste to the Red Keep. And that would be an important shot to have, right? And to include in a trailer. I have a quick question, if I may, a super guest question, because I can't super chat.
You are a super guest.
And you are a super host, my friend. There is a shot in the trailer, the preview for this week, where Euron looks up and gets a look of surprise, you know, which is rare for him. And a lot of people have been speculating, what is Euron looking at? Did you notice that shot, Robert? Or do you have any thoughts on that?
I did, and I do have thoughts on it. So I think this is building around this idea of how is Dany going to approach this? I put this in my trailer breakdown video. So far she's been caught out by these scorpions twice now. Both times it's because it's a surprise attack on her. Now, this time she's got a chance to think about how is it that she could take on the scorpions, which clearly can be taking out dragons in flight. That seems to be a show-only thing. George R. R. Martin has been very clear that that's not really how it happens in the books. Dragonhide is a lot tougher than that. But in the show, they clearly can take down dragons. I think that what she will do is use a tactic that Aegon the Conqueror used, which is to go really, fly really high, get up right into the sun, and then come down out of the sun to attack the fleet.
Cool.
I think that's the way that she's going to be doing it. And I think the fact that he's shielding his eyes implies that he's looking for something up there, but he can't quite make it out. And I think that's what it is. So we're going to get a quite dramatic shot of him trying to figure out what's going on, and then suddenly, before you know it, there's a dragon who's just like dive bombing down and attacking. That is what I think is going on there. Did you have another thought on that, a different perspective?
I didn't think of that because I didn't remember that history. But I like that very much because it's a cool tactic and it's a power move, right? And that would surprise him too. I had two thoughts. Maybe finally I'll get my dream and she'll have like a saddle or like some kind of like armor on the dragon, which is kind of unrealistic, but it might look cool on television. Some people have also speculated that there's more dragons, that Kinvara or, you know, the other red priestesses that Melisandre was involved with had other eggs or something of that nature. But I'm going to say that I like your choice the best there, Robert. I think it's like Occam's razor. It's a simple strategic thing that she could do. It's within the confines of things we already know. It would look really cool and it would definitely surprise Euron. Because they already had that too. Remember in the last episode, they came face to face like that. So it's kind of a redoing of that. And I like that very much.
Good. I'm pleased. So just picking up on a couple of questions from the chat. Susan Dunkel, one of my moderators. Thank you, Susan. They're doing fantastic work. Saying, Beth performs, question, what do you want to see happen tonight separately from what you think will happen? I want the dramatic tension to be resolved in as many different storylines as possible. As long as they can do that, that would work for me. We have to get to an end of so many of these plot lines. They've just been leaving hanging. We've got the Hound and the Mountain has to happen. Jaime and Cersei has to happen. Something has to happen with Jon's claim. Something has to be happening with Tyrion. What about Dany? What's she going to do when she has this choice? Is she going to get to the Iron Throne? So many of these plot lines are coming to a head And it's a really tough ask, but I what I want to happen is for all of them to get resolved. If not in this episode, then to a point where they can be resolved in the last episode. I don't want any loose threads hanging up in terms of plot lines. That's my big ask for what I'm hoping. Mark Hatton, thank you for the super chat, saying George R. Martin said he felt wistful about how the show has handled some storylines. It should have run three more seasons, as well as saying the Winds of Winter update soon. Yeah, I think we've covered the first half of that bit already. In terms of the Winds of Winter, yeah, I'm an optimist. I still think, as I have done for a while, November this year is a good chance. I think that he's now, all the hints are there that he's close to the end of this one. Stan Tahee says, George said, one doesn't hang a wolf army on the wall and not use it. Do you think we'll see this tonight? So this is a reference to Chekhov's gun. You don't hang a gun on the wall in Act 1 if you're not going to fire it by the end of the final act. He has created a wolf army with Nymeria in the Riverlands that we saw very briefly. It wasn't so much of an army on the show. We saw very briefly on the show. In the books, it's massive. It's a super pack. I think it's going to have a huge impact in the books. I don't think we're going to see it on the show, I'm afraid. Axel, I'm going to throw this question to you. Well, we've got two questions. If you answer both of them, thanks, Chrissy of Oldstones, one of my other fantastic moderators, these two questions. First of all, what do you think the point of Drogon's vacation in Valyria? This is going back a few seasons. When Tyrion is on the boat with Jorah, they're going through and you suddenly see Drogon there. First time Tyrion sees the dragon. Yeah. Question is, what was he doing there? Lots of people have been wondering whether or not Drogon was laying eggs. Mm. And then Serial Killer is saying, is Clegane Bowl happening? So two questions. Is Clegane Bowl happening? And was Drogon laying eggs, effectively?
I'll answer the first question. Thank you for the questions, people in the chat. You're awesome. And as far as Clegane Bowl, I think we're going to see it. I'm not like a kind of war fighting kind of guy. I mean, I enjoy a good fight like the rest of us. So I've not been particularly rooting for the Hound storyline to end with a fight with his brother, but I think it's inevitable and I think it will happen. And I think the Hound will be successful. I do have a crazy theory that the Hound kills the Mountain and Arya takes the Mountain's face, but that's just cause I'm crazy. what was the secondary question again?
About the dragon eggs.
Yes. You know, back in the day, when I did my rewatch, I noted this, and I thought that at some point Dany would travel with Drogon back there and she would learn something about herself or her history or something magical or vital to the plot. At this point in the story, I don't know that that's really going to happen. I think that may, for the show, I think that may have just been a way for her not to have a dragon for a little while and for Tyrion to see a dragon in a place where he should see dragons. But if it does play into the Red Priestess and there's more dragons and that's what Euron's looking at or it happens, then that might be pretty cool. But most likely, that was just kind of a plot contrivance at the point.
Yeah. I think I'll pick up on the, I don't think I've got much to add about the dragon eggs. I don't think they're going to play a part in the show, the resolution of the show. I don't think we're suddenly going to get new dragons appearing. They might do it as a little shot towards the end to say, hey, there's some more dragon eggs out there. That is entirely doable. In terms of Clegane Bowl, though, my general view is that I think that some confrontation is inevitable. But I really hope it isn't just that they fight each other. Yeah. I really hope that this is the whole point for Sandor's arc is that there are two things that has to happen. He has to get some resolution with his brother and some resolution about fire because they're connected, because his fear of fire initially comes from the fact that his brother pushed his face into fire when they were children. And that's why he's got all these scars and things like that. So he has to have some resolution to do with that. I still think it makes perfect sense that he wields fire to kill the white. Effectively, that's what his brother is now, but as a mercy killing rather than just because they're wanting to fight each other. That's where I hope it goes. Don't know whether it is going to end that way, but that's where I hope it goes. Matthew Bacon, thank you so much for your super chat. Shout out to Robert for shouting out Selbs super chat, shouting out Tom Davies for shouting out me. Looking forward to super chat until now. Enjoy the episode. Thank you, guys. I think we're going to round it up there. Okay. Let's go to Axel. Just can you remind people where they can find you on the internet?
Sure. First of all, Robert, I want to thank you so much for having me. You have definitely handled thousands of people in a chat scrolling by faster than lightning. Thanks to all the chat moderators. Thanks for everyone joining, watching now and in the future. You can find me at dvrpodcast.com and podcastwinterfell.com. I do a daily podcast, which I'm getting back to after Game of Thrones, called Daily DVR, where I talk about all types of film and TV. We're going to be covering Big Little Lies. We're going to be back with Westworld. We might jump on and cover The Expanse. We love all kinds of TV, but we will be back, most importantly, this evening with the original founder of Podcast Winterfell. Matt Murdock will be joining me for our initial reaction. I can't wait to see the show. Thank you, Robert. This has really made me so excited. I could probably go like two more hours, but I need to save some of my energy. You're the best, brother. Thank you so much.
The pleasure is all mine. Thank you. And I'm really looking forward already to collaborating on Westworld Season 3. It's something we both really, really enjoy. Guys, I always, at the end of this, I say try and recommend a few different places to look for post-show analysis. We've already heard from Axel. I mentioned Bron Steris earlier in the show. Also, you might want to check out Secrets of the Citadel. Gemma, who's been on here a few times, she's got quite a few of my other collaborators there. I think Azora Hype is going to be there, probably JR as well, if you'd like to check them out after the episode. Guys, thank you so much. A final big thank you to the moderators and also to my patrons. I mean it when I say I can't do it without you. If you are at all interested in becoming a patron of the channel, there's a whole series of benefits there. I do audio recordings exclusively for my patrons, things like the pre-release chapters of The Winds of Winter. I've done some audio recordings for my patrons there, or if you just want to support the channel. So if you're watching later, hopefully somewhere around here will appear a link to my Patreon page. Somewhere around here, hopefully, will appear a link to some of the other content I've been doing about Season 8 of Game of Thrones. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy the episode. I will see you on the other side, and I'll see you for the live stream on Thursday. Take care.